Hey, this is Steli Efti.
And this is Heaton Shaw.
And in today's episode, we want to talk about how to manage and run remote teams or a remote company.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
So we've talked about, I think in the past, how to hire freelancers and how to, you know, why remote is powerful and why it can be kind of, an alternative model to having an office and hiring everybody on site. But we've not yet talked about like the day-to-day, the operational challenges and opportunities that come with like running remote companies. I know I have built multiple remote teams and are constantly creating new remote teams that are working on projects. And for us, we went from kind of a semi-remote setup where we had a bunch of people in the office and a bunch of people remote to now, you know, finally transitioning to being a fully remote company and team. So there's probably lots to talk about. Maybe to kick us off, what are some of the things that, you know, you had to figure out and learn on a practical level through trial and error that today are kind of like, whenever you think about remote teams, it's kind of the first thing you think about when it comes to like setting up process and making sure that the team is managed correctly?
We actually talked a bunch about how to build kick-ass remote teams in episode 92. So I definitely want to mention that in case anyone wants more about just how to build them in a little bit higher level than what we're probably going to get into today. For me, I've been building remote teams since about 2003. Well, one of them has been a hybrid as well, where there's an office, and I'm not sure if that was a great idea at this point. But one of the things that I would put out there is like, not everyone's right for a remote team. I do interviews with people. I talk to people, you know, when we're hiring them, and usually there's some, you know, if they're not right for the remote team, there's some hesitation in their voice the second you tell them, oh, it's all remote. You're actually not going to meet with anyone in person, and you have to be okay with that. And then here's what that means. Here's what you get. Here are the positives of that. Here's the negatives. How do you feel about it? I try to get that taken care of in the first interview. Sometimes it takes two just because the person might be wishy-washy and not really know. So, you know, if you look at all the pool of candidates that you have in the world today to work on your team, the majority of them haven't worked remotely. And so, you know, if someone already has a natural hesitation towards it, it can be very difficult for them when they start, if you actually accept them and they join, to deal with it. So I would just start there and say, like, that's one of the first either red flags or whatever. I had one recently where the gentleman had worked remote before. Lately, he hadn't been working remote, and he started working with us for about a month and a half. And one of the reasons we didn't continue after that is because he was lonely. It just seemed like he wanted more in-person interactions and stuff like that, and that just wasn't going to be possible. So yeah, that's the first one I'll throw out there.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, right? Can somebody be, or remote is not right for everybody because it is the type of work where people have to, you know, organize their day and their work environment in a way that allows them to be really productive. And the design of their work and work environment is very much in their own hands versus when you have an office. You know, the work design, which can influence the way your productivity and your happiness at work, is kind of out of your hands, right? You show up and whatever the office, the HQs are, you know, location-wise, people-wise, noise-wise, wherever your desk is, the lighting you get, whatever the amount of interactions are that you're going to have with coworkers, the energy in the office, all these things are given, and then either they work for you or they don't. When you work remotely, you have to create that from scratch for yourself. And that's just not something that is, you know, some people will love that and thrive under that. And some people will hate it. And the most common reason, as you said, is the loneliness, right? So for most people, working remotely means they feel disconnected from their coworkers and their peers, which makes them lonely, which is something that can be a challenge to deal with. And I think that the people that do work remotely really well, they either appreciate the productivity and the focus and the silence that they create in their own work environment much more than the connection with the day-to-day kind of random connection with their peers, or they create a different type of feeling for community, either going to co-working spaces or to coffee places and kind of scheduling a day where they have focused downtime in their own office, and then they go out and enjoy a lot of the benefits of being in control of their own schedule and environment. So that's a big one. Now, when, let's say you hire people and you make sure that they are right for remote, and they're ideally, if they've experienced it, is that can be a big benefit, because that means that they probably know, versus if this would be the first time they do a remote gig, they might find the idea appealing, but it's just still a risk. How will it be in practice? Will they really like it or not? But once they join, when you think about kind of the tools and methodologies and the communication channels and the processes that you guys utilize, maybe we want to just run through a bunch of things that you use, or that you models that you apply in order to manage remote teams that are maybe different from things that a founder would do in a team that has an office and sees each other physically every single day. Well, what's the first thing that comes to mind there?
Yeah, I mean, I think Slack has really helped a lot. So has HipChat before that, in helping people feel like they are connected to everyone else. So that's been the big primary thing that we've used. And then also, so, you know, a remote team does have a culture, and a lot of it has to do with, like, the images you post, or how much people are sharing about their lives on Slack and places like that. So there is some level of, like, personal sharing that happens in Slack. Sometimes there's even rooms created just for that, not necessarily the random room, but the room, if you felt like your remote team is just working 7 days a week and you want them to, like, kick back a little bit, you would have, like, a weekend room and make it so that people are sharing what they're doing on the weekend. Another thing that I've seen that may be very effective is when you have, let's say, a Monday virtual meeting on Monday. Most people are using, like, Zoom these days, just because it's been pretty popular and growing. But you could be using Uber Conference or whatever tool, Hangouts or whatever. You're actually in the deck. Usually, like, I would recommend having a deck where, the product managers or, CEO or whoever is creating a deck, if, depending on the size of the team or teams inside the company, that there's a lot of, like, other people's faces, what they did. If someone took a great picture on a vacation, you highlight that. So there's a lot of this, like, things that normally would happen in an office that you end up, if you really want a healthy culture, you want to be doing as much as possible in this remote environment. And it's not like I say, oh, you should do one of these, or this one will work for you. It's more so cultural to the remote team, to the founders, to the, executives, or even, like, the managers, and how they think about it and what culture they want. And I found that to be super effective. So there's a lot of strategies to make it so that you are still able to know about the people on your team, and it's not just all about work.
Yeah, I think that's an important one, right? I think you want to create situations where people can communicate about things other than work, because that's how a lot of times people, that's going to be the social glue that makes everything sticks together, but also it will allow you to understand your coworkers a lot better, right? We're not one-dimensional beings, and understanding the people you work with purely based on their work skill and their work product is going to be good, but not enough necessarily to really feel connected with them, to be able to communicate really effectively, and to try to be able to have a connection on a human level. But once you know what somebody's quirks and hobbies are and interests, or what kind of the recent, also it puts the work in perspective, right? If you know that somebody just went through a big move, or they just had this amazing vacation, or they had this crisis in their own family and somebody got really sick, it puts everything else they do and who they are and how they communicate into a grander context that will allow everybody to communicate better with them, work better with them, understand them better, and interpret their own actions a lot better. So I love the idea of the weekends room. We have a room that's called Shenanigans. It's probably the most active room in all of them. And it's just like a never-ending stream of mischievous threads and messages and funny pictures and articles and whatever. So that's really cool. We recently started doing something. So we do have one virtual meeting a week, which is on Tuesdays. Every team lead basically sends out a report on Monday of, like, what has happened the past week and what's going to transpire this week, with kind of the KPIs and metrics and things like that. So people have a date to look at those reports and comment on them digitally in a kind of Dropbox paper or Google Doc. And then on Tuesday, we have a team meeting where we just have, Q&As and discussions around the progress of different teams. And right after that, which is kind of usually 25 to 30 minutes long, it's a fairly tight meeting. And right after that, we just started a few weeks ago to do one-on-one. So there's just a spreadsheet, and randomly two people are connected together to just have like a 10-15 minute one-on-one, and it's highly encouraged to actually have it not be necessarily about work. So you'll have somebody from the marketing team talk to somebody on engineering that they usually just don't work with on a day-to-day basis, don't interact with as much, and now have a connection or the ability to have like a little bit of space to do a one-on-one conversation, figure out, you know, what's the weather like in, you know, Russia or where in Thailand or in the US or wherever people are, and what are you currently working on and how are things going? So that's been really effective to just talk to people, especially people that you don't interact with as much on a daily basis, but still getting a chance to really understand people from other teams and people that you don't deal with on a close kind of work relationship basis.
Yeah, I think like what we're both pointing to here is like, just because it's remote doesn't mean you have to not do a lot of the things you would do in an office, right? There are still norms in your company. There are still these things happening. You know, the shenanigans makes perfect sense for your company culture. You know what I mean? I'm not surprised that's the name of your room, right? So like, it's just like perfect. Like, I know you, I know kind of all that and the culture of your company. So it's like, you don't want to feel like you can't express yourself as a human being in a remote company. You want to create those norms. You want to create those things and give people the opportunity to share more about themselves. So one other piece, switching gears into something that I think it would be less fun compared to all the kind of non-work stuff, is like, how do you get work done? And I have one thing that really keeps hitting home, and it feels very prescriptive and almost like robotic, but it's been really helpful in my companies, which is everyone that's working on the teams is essentially putting in every day what they're actually doing. So what are you going to do today? What did you do yesterday? And then, you know, once it gets done, or, you know, whenever there's progress, there's an update. And there's a bunch of tools that you can use that, you know, people have built on top of Slack. Ours is literally called daily ship goals in one of the teams. And it's literally everyone putting in what they're planning on shipping that day. It's a very product engineering heavy company. So literally the team is putting in there exactly what they're planning on shipping that day. And it's literally a daily cadence. And that's been super impactful in helping everyone know what each other is doing and holding yourself accountable in this remote environment when, you know, someone's not looking over your shoulders, or you can't just walk over to someone and be like, hey, what's up with that thing?
I like that. We've tried this a while ago. It's been a minute though. The team has changed and grown a lot since then. But I remember when we were trying this, and for some people it worked really, really well. Partially probably because of their personality, but also partially because of the type of work they were doing. Then for some people, it seemed pretty repetitive because they're, you know, the kind of things that we're doing on a day-to-day basis, at least at certain phases, maybe for a 2-week or 3-week period, was pretty repetitive. So we struggled with that. We did that for a little while, and then we stopped, and we've been switching and experimenting wildly with kind of the model of people reporting what they do and keeping each other both accountable, but also having a level of transparency. Now we're using, a bunch of our teams are using Asana pretty heavily and kind of putting their to-dos. And that has been very helpful for certain teams to just see transparently what people are working on and what they finished today and what's going on. But it's not that daily. It doesn't have that daily kind of report to everybody function. So yeah, so I'm curious about that.
I found it to increase accountability and alignment on engineering and product. I've also found it when marketing teams get involved in it and they start doing it too. And this is all shared across the whole company or your team. If the teams are really large, that works too. But when marketing gets involved, and basically what happens is everyone knows what marketing's doing. And that totally changes the game, you know, quite a bit in terms of everyone else's involvement in it. And even coordination actually changes quite a bit in a positive way, where people start coordinating more. And understanding how they can help each other on things and realize, oh, you know, Sean's working on this marketing page. You know, I've already got a bunch of code he can use, or, you know, we can just copy this one other page that we have. We don't have to build it from scratch. So a lot of these things start happening just because everyone's sharing kind of what they're working on, what they're doing in a way, in a remote environment where it would be Asana, it would be Confluence, it would be all this stuff that usually would require a product manager or somebody who's responsible for those tools and the upkeep of the tools. Instead, what we found is that this has been a lot more useful than the upkeep of an Asana or a tool like that, just because those tools also turn into very problematic things where it's like you're forcing your team to use them, or everyone has to put their tasks in there. And oftentimes that leads to its own sort of issues. So we found that just like people posting what they're doing that day, what they did the day before, and kind of how it's going as the day progresses, that's been some of the most impactful things, because it just leads to like way quicker collaboration without making it like, oh, I have to enter this task in, I have to hit done, I have to make sure that it's all, I've got every detail in there and blah, blah, blah. This is has felt a lot better. And we've used all the other tools too. We do find that team members who can't do this might not be good for a remote team. Is kind of a newer kind of thesis I've been developing, simply because they might not be like able to figure out how to chunk up their work into sort of daily work. And that's part of the problem. Like if you can't chunk up your work in daily work, no matter what part of the team you're on or part of the company, I think that's a problem, especially in a remote company.
Yeah, because you have to manage your own productivity much more so than you would in usually in an office environment. What's the channel that you guys use to communicate that? So is it an email that is sent to everybody? Is it a unique Slack channel where everybody posts their daily?
Yeah. It's a unique Slack channel called like Daily Ship Goals in one of the companies, just because we needed to switch to daily goals. And so everyone has ship goals regardless of where they're at and what they're doing.
And how many people are part of that? Like, what do you have? You ever found that, let's say, if you had 50 people in a room like that, do you think that would then start breaking? Because
So you would break it up into separate teams at that point. So usually the teams are pretty small. It's like, you know, Amazon's two pizza people or whatever, 2 to 8 people. And then after that, we just start splitting up the rooms or splitting up the teams. It has worked, though, up to even 12 people. So, and I'm sure it would work even past that as long as you're using some kind of tool. And because of the way you can search through Slack, it actually hasn't been a big problem. When you have, though, 50 people and they're all sharing it, that's when it becomes a problem. Because then you just can't keep up with it. But up to about 12, it doesn't seem to have broken.
Cool. That's awesome. So what other, maybe to round this discussion up, so this is, I think, a really powerful tool. And to summarize it, a lot of the things that we're seeing are basically like in a remote environment to manage it effectively, you need the right people, but also B, you need to communicate a lot, right? And communication, funny enough, has been a theme in your recently on Twitter for you, I've noticed, and how communication is kind of like the more you communicate, the more friction and misalignment goes away in relationships with others, and the less communication happens, the more of these things tend to pop up. So in a remote environment, yep. It seems like communicating much more so than you probably naturally would tend to do is a big key to success. Because the beauty of an office environment is that there's an insane amount of communication happening without any effort. Even if nobody's talking, just by people's body language, they're communicating to each other. There's a certain vibe in the room. There's a certain energy in the room. You walk into the office, you look at somebody, people's expressions on their faces, and you already know a ton of what is happening in their life or how they're feeling right now. All that is not there. So you have to compensate for that with active communication. You can't passively communicate. And
yeah,
doing
totally
that,
agree.
Right? And there's part of it that has to do with like fun and social environments and shenanigan rooms, weekend rooms. And, you know, we even wrote an article once about how we use Snapchat in the team to have more fun and kind of connect socially. So there's a lot of a benefit to doing that. But then there's the other side of it, which is, okay, how do you over communicate around work? And how do you communicate to get more work done and to get better work done, right? So I love the simplicity of the approach that you suggested. What other maybe one or two tips can we give people to kind of round up this episode?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to still stick to the communication theme. You're right. It's just been a theme I've been thinking about a lot. I've just found that like most of the problems in a company, even in any relationship, just communication is the easy solution. Easy meaning like the fastest, easiest path. And whoever's willing to communicate ends up being able to, you know, solve any problems and like really kick off the solution. So on a remote team, I think it's really easy. This is the one tip I'd give. It's easy to misinterpret text and what someone said. It's really easy to like say, think, especially when you're new to a remote team or you haven't worked with someone a lot, they could say something and it could set you off and you could have all these feelings about it. And so this is kind of on the communication theme. I just communicate about it. Just tell somebody like, hey, when you use those words, it just made me feel this way. I just want to make sure nothing's wrong. I want to make sure you're not mad at me or whatever, you know, and everything's okay. You know, because if not, it's worth talking about. So I find myself doing that, or at least coaching people on the team doing that, to do that more often, just because somebody said something a certain way in an email or in a Slack message, it doesn't mean that like they're mad at you. It doesn't mean that anything's wrong. It just might be the way they communicate, or they might not be very good at sugarcoating something, for example. So that's one. Another one is, I know on remote teams, like now because of all the video technology, we are getting on video quite a bit more. I find it really powerful to just get on a video call, and you could pretty quickly figure out how somebody's feeling just by, you know, looking at their face, their energy level, et cetera. And that can really help give you some guidance on how that team member is doing.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's such an easy one to miss, because when you're remote, you're like, why should I do the video call? We can also just do voice call. And people a lot of times are self-conscious when my hair is not perfect or the light here is really shitty or I'm in my basement or something. If you can get over that, it is really powerful. Like the amount of passive communication and the amount of signals you give just by your facial expressions and your body language is massive. And adding that as context to what you're saying just make communication usually a lot better. So I love that tip. And it's such a simple one, but there's such a big temptation for people that work remotely to just not do it. So for me, the two tips, the one thing that I riff on was the, you know, coming across maybe in the wrong way in written communication. One thing that I've learned early on was that, particularly with one of my co-founders, for instance, when we had disagreement and we were writing to each other, it usually escalated in a bad way. But when we had disagreement and we talked to each other, it was always a really good discussion. And it always kind of, we always quickly got to either one side or the other, or got alignment again. So I just learned to, whenever we started having an argument in the written communication channel, to switch to kind of a synchronous voice call or something like that.
I really like that. I mean, I have a few partners, and like literally in all my cases, the disagreements are best settled a voice or video.
Yeah, yeah. I've learned that early on, and has made all the difference in the world, because things in the early days would just escalate these massive arguments that would kind of like consume the entire day, right? Because it's chat, so I would just argue the entire day with this person and not get anything else done. And now when the moment we start disagreeing in chat, I just call him, and within 5 minutes we're good, right? And we've solved it and figured it out, and it was like all fine. So that leads me to another point, which we started recently and we're still experimenting with, which is we now have these like one pages that's like the guide to working with me, right? And it's like a quick like, here's the best way for you to work with me. Here's what I really like. Here's what irritates me. Here's how to deal with me in certain situations. And we felt like, especially now that we're like 20, going to double this year to probably 40 people on the team, and it's all remote people, it's been a useful tool to kind of be like, all right, I'm working with these three people, and here's their guides on how they like to be communicated to and all that. And the second thing when it comes to communication is, I do think that remote teams should have a proactive communicated etiquette on how to talk to each other. So what I mean by that is that chat, for instance, when we were a small team, it was kind of understood that I could chat you at any time in the day and the week, and I never expected a response promptly, right? So chat would be like, whenever I have something on my mind, I ping you, I say, hey, Heaton, what do you think about this idea? And I could wait for days. If it's urgent, I'll call you or email you. But if it's chat, I have all the time in the world to wait, right? And unless I say I need an answer ASAP. And that was kind of understood in the small team. But as we grew the team, people didn't know. And I would chat people at like 11 p.m. because I was thinking about something or I had some idea. And they felt the need to respond immediately. So they were out for dinner or having a good time and seeing, shit, Stelly is chatting me about some work-related thing. And they would feel the pressure to answer immediately or get the thing done or whatever. And I didn't realize that at first. And then once it came out in a team meeting, it made all the difference in the world. And we kind of started like being more explicit and saying, here's how we communicate in chat, here's how we do it in email, here's what, and if people, but also I started just, honestly, I started at times to just be like, okay, it's Saturday and it's 1 a.m. And even if I've told everybody they don't need to respond, let me not chat, yeah. Because they still...
You can only control yourself, Kelly.
I'm like, because, they still might see it, right? Even if I told them they don't need to respond, it might still pop up on their phone, although I recommend everybody not to have notifications on. So I've also kind of started to be a bit more mindful myself. But yeah, just be explicit and make sure that everybody on the team understands, okay, here's the channel that needs urgent and immediate response. Here's the channel that's much more casual. And make sure that everybody's on the same page there so that people don't feel pressure to communicate or to respond to things if there's no real good reason to do so. All right, I think that's it from us for this week. We'll hear you guys very soon. Bye-bye.